Welcome to Vox Talks, a series of audio interviews with leading economists from around the world. My name is Ramesh Vaitalingam, and today's interview is with Dimitrios Papadimitriou, who is president and co-founder of the Migration Policy Institute in Washington, D.C. Dimitrios and I met at the Global Economic Symposium in Germany in mid-September 2009, where he was speaking at a session called Making Migration Work After the Crisis. I began by asking him to lay out the key things that governments should focus on at this time.
First of all, they should, to the extent possible, increase their investments in immigrant integration. Fundamentally, this is the one area of many on immigration where we're really falling down on the job. And if I had even a limited number of dollars to invest, I would invest it on testing different ways of integrating immigrants and then investing on those that prove to be most fruitful. The second thing I would try to do is review my immigration stance altogether. This is a good time for administrative agencies, advocacy communities, just about everyone, to sort of look back during the last year or two or three or four and say, where have we done it? Have we done it right, and where have we done it wrong? Because again, once you get out of the crisis, you would want to come in with policies that make most sense. The third thing that I would try to avoid, this is a defense rather than an offensive movement, would be to try to avoid doing extraordinary things during the crisis. You know, I see governments here, you know, and they are trying to cut the numbers down too much, trying to increase some of the restrictions and all that in ways that don't make very much sense. And I see other governments saying, let's take them all in. The more, the merrier. You know, if there is a thing that I've learned in my business for the last 40 years is that every time that you do things that are really out of the ordinary, you typically pay a penalty for it and you get it wrong. For instance, there are a few governments that really have not adjusted their immigration formula at all, despite the fact that they have evidence from their own studies, their own past, let alone evidence that is now robust and is tested and is proven across different countries, that people who come to our countries during economic crisis, they actually fail to do nearly as well as immigrants, skilled immigrants, for instance, who come during good economic times. These people become economically scarred and don't catch up sometime for a decade or more with others who came in before or after the crisis. That's a bit irresponsible, I think. As irresponsible, of course, as it is to say, you know, I've done it all wrong, let's zero out immigration, etc., etc. So this is time, and that's the third point, to sort of keep your head about you and really do things in modest, moderate steps. And a little bit of an adjustment here, a little bit of an adjustment there, and get ready to come out, you know, when the recession is over and have a stronger immigration system.
Tell me, Dimitrios, a little bit more about the downside for migrants of the crisis. So you mentioned the danger that if a country opens its doors more widely and they come in and they're potentially scarred in terms of their future life prospects. But there's also the downside that some countries have tightened up limiting opportunities. But there's also the danger, I guess, for migrants, which I've certainly seen in some European countries, of a native reaction against the migrants because they think, as jobs get fewer, that their jobs are being stolen.
Certainly, nativism is doing very well nowadays. I'm afraid in most countries, you know, the thing that surprises me about the United States is that we don't see very much of it, and that surprises me. And there are good explanations why you don't see more. But let me talk about the places where you do see the emergence of nativism and the emergence of anti-immigrant animus. You see it in places where governments sort of lost their way with regard to immigration. You see it in Spain. Not as much as one would have expected, but nonetheless, you see it in terms of the number of incidents. You see exploitation on the part of employers who take advantage of the fact that immigrants are much more vulnerable during these bad economic times that really take advantage of immigrants. You see it in the UK, of course, you know, where you probably have, you know, sort of some unusual but high-profile incidents. And of course, you see it in the polls, where native politicians and immigrant politicians and all that in the most recent elections for the European Parliament in many countries saw their share of the vote double and triple in places as, let's say, as far away as my native Greece, but the Netherlands and many other places. The interesting thing about this recession is that it's very difficult to speak with absolute certainty in ways that covers just about everyone. For instance, in Germany, you really haven't seen much of this, which is when considering where Germany and immigration were 10 or 15 years ago, is perhaps a bit surprising. But altogether, I think that we ought to be concerned about the rise of nativism, the rise of the anti-immigrant right, particularly if this recession were to really become deeper and last longer in terms of people and the effects of the recession on people. Everybody seems to be celebrating, perhaps a bit prematurely, the fact that the GDP is going up. And they, of course, very conveniently forget that this is going up relative to the last month, which may have been 15 or 17 points below where it was a year ago. But nonetheless, you know, we have to be hopeful, and I understand this. But all the evidence that we have is that even after the recession ends, and we're certain that it will end sometime the second half of this year, I suspect, it may take as much as 12, 18, 24, or more months before we start growing the labor force, which means that immigrants and their offspring, who are always suffering in these kinds of recessions disproportionately, will feel the sting much longer than everybody else who is involved in the economy will feel it. It means that these people are likely to be forgotten in the process. It means that the disinvestments that some governments will make in terms of integration, you know, education, training programs, and all that will be felt down the road, much, you know, in a much more strong, in a much stronger way for immigrants and their offspring. And it means that after we really are out of the woods, the differences in terms of outcomes, in terms of, you know, economic prosperity, in terms of access to the labor market and position in the labor market for immigrants relative to most natives is actually going to be even larger than it was before we got into this recession. So I worry about the effects on people. And of course, when immigrants don't make money in our countries, they send less money back home, which means that you have, in a sense, a spreading effect of this unhappy set of circumstances to people who really need the money to survive where they are. So if this is, you know, if you wanted to think in terms of the deep difficulties with migration and the recession, these are the kinds of things that you'd be thinking about.
Can we maybe think a little bit longer term about what are really, from in your view, the key elements of a sensible migration policy for a developed country like the United States or the countries of Europe?
Well, first of all, it has to be much more legal than it has been. I think that we're past the point where we could sort of wink at illegal immigration. Every country will have some illegal immigration. But there comes a point where people begin to sort of resent this. And popular reaction, whether we like it or not, shapes politicians' decisions, and it's politicians who make the decisions, not some bureaucrat who calls themselves a policymaker here in Europe. So I worry about that. The other things that, you know, I would want to have fixed, as it were, I would want to tie immigration much more organically to what else is happening in our countries. In other words, We may have lost our way about immigration another way. Immigration is supposed to be a supplement, whether it's demographics that we're talking about, whether it is competitiveness that we're talking about, where it is simply filling shortages that we're talking about. Okay? We have to go back to trying to think of the linkages and therefore to address the consequences of immigration in a much more effective, much more rational way. And those countries that will do that, I think will find that their politicians will be allowed to have greater openings to immigration 5 or 7 years down the road, which means that the welfare effect of more immigration can spread more effectively throughout the globe.
You mentioned earlier about the significance of remittances by migrants back to their origin countries. It seems to me that the whole debate about migration needs to be fitted in with the debates about trade and aid. I mean, are we making any progress there?
Well, we had been remarkable progress, although not as remarkable as many people think, because part of the enormous growth in remittances, and remittances have doubled, and almost doubled again in the past 10 years, much of that progress is because we now have found better ways to count them. Okay? But nonetheless, remittances have been very large. They're still going to be roughly about $300 billion this year. They're going to be, there are many countries, you know, where you have 10 and 20 billion per year in remittances, which simply means that the welfare of people, those people who receive remittances, but also the broader households, increases dramatically. There is one estimate that may be optimistic by the Inter-American Development Bank that suggests that there may be 1 billion people around the globe that get some benefit because of remittances. So remittances have become more than just a lifeline for certain people. They become an effort to reduce poverty, although not for a country, but for a household. But if you increase the wealth of households, other things happen in the real economy back home, as it were. So, you know, that's a good thing. And we need to find ways, and here goes back to our earlier conversation about more legal and better managed migration. When you have more legal and better managed migration, even if you don't have as many immigrants, these immigrants will be earning more. And when they earn more, they will remit more. So we can continue to see the remittances going up. At the end of the day, remittances is not all of the answer, like anything else on immigration is not all of the answer. Some other people, particularly back home, such as governments and institutions and all that, really have to do a job that they haven't been doing particularly well or at all over the past 20 or 50 years, which is do all of the kinds of reforms that are necessary in order to create an environment where people can survive in their own countries. In other words, the ideal end of all of this conversation about immigration is more legality, things that make sense, in other words, better managed, and people migrate in truly because of opportunity differentials rather than because that they don't have too many choices.
What about the role of international organisations and international fora for discussion about this issue? I mean, it seems to me that has to be a very important part of the story.
It is. I am not a fan of discussion fora, okay? I'm talking about global discussion. There are far too many countries having far too many different ideas, and this is not about, immigration is not about sort of trade or moving widgets, as I'd like to say it. This is about moving people. And when you move people, okay, you basically impact the society. And the society is never the sum of its economic transactions. That may be the economy, but not the society. Okay? So what we need to start with, I'm going to be agnostic as to where we're going to be 25 years from now, but what we need to start with is sharing good practices, and begin to agree, probably at a small group of countries at a time, begin to agree on what are acceptable practices in international migration and what are unacceptable practices. And then countries then will have a choice. They're either going to follow sort of the dark road, or they're going to follow the enlightened road. Those that follow the enlightened road would also draw, in the long run, the greatest benefits from migration.
Finally, perhaps we can focus upon people, because you very much emphasise the importance of thinking of migration in terms of individual experiences. And now, go back to your first issue that you raised about immigrant integration and ideas for solutions.
Immigration can be had on the cheap, and you can get quite a few benefits out of it. Or you can make some investments, and you can multiply your benefits. Okay? So what are the investments? Language training. Every research study there is, regardless of where it is done, it shows a very clear relationship between speaking the language and how well you speak the language and how well you do it in the labor market. So in terms of economic integration, teaching people the language. And I don't care if it's the governments in combination, with business sectors, in combination with, civil society. I'm going to be agnostic as to how you deliver language tuition. But empowering people to speak the language, this way they can do well by the economy, and even more importantly, well by the community of which they are now part, is a big, big area for progress. Countries are beginning to get that, and they're beginning to invest in this, but that's not enough. We also have to invest in having immigrants understand that becoming part of a new community implies that they have to understand the new community, and they have to buy into the way that the community is organized, and the community of which now they are part have to understand that these are new members of the community. So both parts of the, in this particular equation, have to put something into this common pot in order to create a better future for themselves. All too often, we're expecting immigrants to do X, Y, and Z, thinking that, we're the bosses. We call all the shots. But, the reality is that you mix these people together, the community changes too. Okay, if you don't get that, it takes you longer to get most of the benefits of migration. At the end of the day, whether small, medium, or large, international migration amounts to social engineering. If you do it well, you get great benefits. If you screw up, you pay the consequences.
Dimitrios Papadimitriou, many thanks.